Geekonomics.
That is Greta Van Fleet, one of my new favorite rock bands, relatively young group from Michigan, and they've got a very authentic 70s sound to me, so I've been digging them. Greta Van Fleet, that song is Highway Tune. I love this song. I've been doing a lot of coding and designing and marketing to this thing. So Greta Van Fleet. Greta Van Fleet. Like the Greta Van, whatever her name is, on whatever that show is, on whatever that news network is. I wouldn't know because I haven't watched mainstream news since the right around the election of 2016. Whoop, whoop. So I'm like a year and a half detoxed from that. Bull dookie. Man, mainstream news, just what a partisan disaster on both sides. And yeah, it just reminds me of like middle school name calling. So I'm 18 months clean and detoxed from that. And you ask me, well, where do I get my news? And really, I'm so busy trying to build my business. I don't have time for news because it's not even news. It's all just, I think Trump hit the nail on the head, but I think it applies across the board. 90%+ of the crap that comes out of the major networks, regardless of so-called party affiliation, is just fake. It's just drivel and just partisan hatred. So no time for that. And I would think that busy entrepreneurs probably feel the same way. So welcome to Muthonomics, episode. Whatever episode we're into here, I've kind of lost track. What we're doing is starting the show with a Greta Van Fleet reference and Highway Tune song. And then I guess we had a little bit of political banter and dismissal. I'm proud that I'm 18 months clean on that stuff. I want to talk about something today that came up in a conversation. I had happy hour with a couple guys last night. We went and had a few drinks and some appetizers at a little place downtown Tampa, and it was an enjoyable experience. Weather is beautiful. The weather is absolutely gorgeous in Tampa around this time of year. Although February was, we had 5 record highs throughout February. But yes, last night it was probably mid-60s. Just a tiny bit of a sea breeze coming in off the water. Absolutely gorgeous. So we sat there for a good 3 hours and just shot the breeze about business and software and sales. And guy was in banking, and then he took a left turn and did acting for 5 years, got his SAG card. Interesting, interesting man. And then the other guy that was there is fascinating as well. Been in sales for software sales 35 years. Recently retired and is looking to mentor younger folk like myself. So we had a great time. But something that came up was this whole concept of the unicorn. And if you're in entrepreneurial circles, you know that the unicorn is the coveted space to have right now. I believe it's a company that has over $1 trillion valuation. And one of the companies here in Tampa just got that designation of being the Tampa Bay area's first unicorn. And it's a company called ConnectWise, I believe. And they provide IT services. And I think that's pretty much it. Just a whole wider range of IT services. And one of the gentlemen last night said, well, maybe your company will be the second unicorn. And I've never thought in those terms, so I didn't really have a response. I just kind of said, oh, you know, whatever. But as I was driving home that night, and then as I've thought about it more today, I just feel like saying unicorns aren't real. Like, unicorns are fake. Unicorns exist in fantasy novels, in science fiction things, in children's fairy tales. They're fake. And so the more I thought about it, I was going, why would I want to try to be something that's fake, that doesn't exist, that isn't real? I mean, I get the whole thing of, hey, that company's a whale. I mean, at least whales are real. Like, we can see them and measure them, and we understand that they're real. But when we get into this realm of trying to become a unicorn, I think we get into some pretty foundationless waters. And not that waters have foundation in the first place, because water is water. But we get into some areas that I think really lack stability and lack solid foundations from which to build upon. And I'll try to share with you what I mean by that. Not to sound all alliteration, I tend to do a little bit too much alliteration in my podcast, perhaps. But when we start to focus on becoming a unicorn, all we're looking at is the valuation. And we forget that there's been some really high valuations on companies that have turned out to be steaming piles of horse manure. I mean, back in 08, Bear Stearns had a tremendous valuation in 2000 up to 2007. They had a tremendous valuation until their valuation was nothing. You had Countrywide Mortgage, who had actually was the mortgage carrier for our first house that we bought. They had a tremendous valuation until they were worth nothing. Kmart at one point had a tremendous valuation until they were worth nothing. And so I don't understand. I mean, I do understand. People want to be a unicorn because it means gobs and gobs of cash for the early stage investors and for the founders. And I think this is what has really bothered me ever since I went through business school, is that the emphasis in these circles is placed on making the founders and the initial investors filthy rich, even if people get screwed in the long run. And that's really, really bothered me. And I'm kind of appalled that that culture still exists, even in the entrepreneurial space, where the space talks a lot about, oh, value to the marketplace, and how are you serving people, and what problems are you solving? But it's really just kind of politically correct cover for the underlying foundation, which is underlying motivation, which is we just want to have a huge valuation so that the Series A funders and the founders can make a filthy amount of money and then screw everybody. Maybe not explicitly then screw everybody, but then who cares if everybody else loses their shirt in the process? Who cares if the company goes to zero after that? As long as we hit the unicorn valuation, cash out, then who cares what happens after that? And I think you've seen this over and over and over and over again. If you just look at the NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange, where founders have made a ton of money upon an IPO, and people, the stock underperforms, and it's because the company underperforms, and it's because the company, although at one point having a stupid high valuation, has under-delivered tremendously on the actual value front. So I think for the entrepreneurial space to maybe gain some credibility here, and for entrepreneurs who are running their own business or their own startup or developing their own product or their own service, you guys and gals, we need to, as a community, push back on this idea that the only goal is to cash out and make a grip load of money. I think that is corrupting the space. And you go, oh, wait a second, Brandon, I thought you were a laissez-faire free market economist. Of course I am. I'm probably more laissez-faire than 99.9% of the people in free markets. I love laissez-faire. But I also think that there is an ethical obligation to, if you're going to reap the rewards of a laissez-faire system, it should not be based upon the smoke and mirror game of let's get the Series A funders and the founders cashed out big time and we'll just see what happens with everybody else. And I think too often that's the sentiment that is thrown around. Now, it could be that once the founders and the Series A funders cash out, you know, because there's this whole thing in the entrepreneurial world of, oh, it, you know, it takes one set of skills to start a business, but it takes a whole nother set of skills to manage a business. So it may very well be like an Apple situation in the 80s where, you know, the quote unquote run the business guys squeeze out or, you know, fire essentially Steve Jobs, kick him out of there. And then they run the company into the ground. I mean, it could very well be that, that these companies, once the founder cashes out and they lose that identity, they lose that unique perspective and passion for why the company started in the first place, maybe then a bunch of suits come in that don't share the same vision, they don't share the same passion, and they turn it into, you know, profit is equal to, you know, revenue minus costs, and that's all they care about. So it could be that. It could very well be that. But if you're an entrepreneur, I wouldn't put the emphasis on your valuation. I would put the emphasis on, I would ask yourself, what am I doing? What is my company doing that is actually providing lasting value to my current customers? And what are we doing or brainstorming or going to launch soon that is going to add value to my community, to the society, to my target market? And focus there. And let the valuation be a secondary thing. I'll never forget, and I may have shared this before in a previous episode, but my favorite class in college was entrepreneurship. It was a senior level, 400 level class that we actually won the business plan competition for the school. And it was taught by a guy who was an adjunct professor and an entrepreneur. And we had several conversations throughout the year while I was taking his class. And he told me that his most profitable business was a business where he serviced, it was a porta potty business. And he said that it was the most profitable business that he had ever been involved with. And he said, it's not sexy. It's not glamorous. Nobody's going to write, you know, an Inc. 500 cover story on, you know, the porta potties that you see at the concerts or at the 5K runs or the half marathons or whatever the event is. But he said there's a constant stream of events, and there's a constant need for people to use the bathroom at those events. And he said that was his most profitable business. He just kept it under wraps and just, you know, he had a team that would deliver, set up, and then, you know, come and retrieve an empty porta potty weekend after weekend after weekend. And he said it was just a massive cash cow for them. And that's always stuck with me, because especially in the tech space, everybody's so obsessed with the next big idea and the next, oh, what's the next big thing? It's blockchain. Everybody needs to move into blockchain. Well, maybe you just need to find what the porta potty equivalent to the tech world is and do it. And maybe you'll never land on the cover of Inc. Or maybe you'll never land on the cover of Fortune or Entrepreneur or Wired or whatever. But maybe you'll provide a valuable service to a lot of people and make a profit in the meantime. So I tend to default to those sorts of perspectives. Like I ask myself quite frequently, what's the porta potty equivalent in the tech space? What's something that is not sexy? What is something that doesn't have a lot of press, you know, clamoring about it, but what's a service or what's a need that needs to be filled, and try to go fill that. So I would encourage you to ask those questions of, you know, what value are you offering that is lasting, instead of worrying about what your potential valuation is. Because as I've said, and I probably should actually do some research and look at, you know, charting, maybe even do a data visualization on these massive valuations where they're now worth nothing. I remember the tech bubble of the late 90s and early 2000s. I remember pets.com was through the roof, and one of my friends took out like a second mortgage to buy $50,000 worth of pets.com stock. And then everybody realized that it cost like $100 to ship a 50-pound bag of dog food, and they said, oh, whoops, this model's not going to work. And the thing went to zero in a heartbeat. And, you know, that was it. So this whole valuation game is suspect at best. And I don't like things that are suspect. I like things that are mathematically logical. I like things that make mathematical sense and not in a, oh, well, if you just look at their earnings and you, you know, do all this stuff, then yeah, of course it makes sense. No, no, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. I actually wrote an article about this probably 5 or 6 years ago, maybe even longer now, when Instagram was valued at $2 billion. And I referenced the a canal company in the early 1800s that was trading at 400 times its projected earnings. And it was 10 years before this company actually brought their patented canal locking technology to the market. And their stock was trading at 400 times projected earnings. They hadn't even made a penny. They hadn't even installed a canal. And that was happening. So yes, I understand that speculation is something that's real. And I understand that a lot of wealth can be created. Monetary paper wealth can be created in speculative driven markets. I understand that. But I don't know. I just don't think your soul is going to bode well if you make a lot of paper wealth by just stoking the speculation fires. I think you need to be offering more to the market than just a bunch of drummed up hype to try to increase your paper wealth and then pull the trigger at the right time to make a ton of money personally. So these thoughts might not be, you know, in line with the classical scene of whatever Silicon Valley and entrepreneurship has become, but I think just because it's popular doesn't mean that it's right. And all you have to do is look throughout history to say that that statement is true. Slavery was popular. It doesn't mean that it was right. It was the farthest thing from right. It was so morally wrong, but it was popular. The Third Reich was popular, but that doesn't mean that they were right. So I'm not equating entrepreneurship, the Silicon Valley, to those horrible injustices that were done. But my point is that just because something is popular does not mean that it is morally right. And I have a lot of suspicion and a lot of hesitancy to jump on board with this whole paper valuation craze and say, your only job as the founder is to drive the valuation as high as possible. Well, I'm not really interested in that. What does it profit a man to gain the whole world but lose his soul, the Bible would tell us. The good book, the holy writ, whatever you want to call it, reminds me of my sixth grader on the way home from school today said, Dad, are history teachers qualified in to talk about theology? And I said, well, I don't know. I mean, what's your history teacher's background? What have they studied? And he said, well, she just really wanted to convince me that the Bible was wrong. And I was like, wait a second, your sixth grade history teacher is taking up a personal agenda with your faith to open the eyes of this catechized, brainwashed sixth grader, supposedly, that can't think for himself because his evil parents have blinded him to other perspectives. So we had a really good conversation that continued for about an hour after he got home. But I just love people with agendas like that. It's like, teach history and shut your pie hole about other topics. I mean, at least with the sixth graders, come on, like, stay in your lane, teach what's in front of you. And if you are going to have a discussion about theology and the history of religion, that's fine. But don't try to pigeonhole and prove whatever your particular bias is. Just open it up. Just open it up. Ask questions. Be curious. Find out what the students are into. Don't try to download your crap on my children. I've already downloaded, which cracks me up. I forget which comedian it was, but he said that that's parenting. You're essentially unplugging your USB drive with all the crap that you have, and you're downloading it onto your kid, and that's essentially parenting. It's always made me laugh. I don't know how I got to sixth grade history teachers from paper valuations. But yeah, so if you're an entrepreneur, I'd stop and ask, hey, make a list. Say, hey, here's the main value that we are adding. And make sure it's tangible. Like, make sure it's tangible. And just because it's tangible, I don't mean that it's, you know, like a widget that you can feel. It doesn't have to be a 3D printed something or something that's cast or created or molded. It could be a product or a service or something digital. But make sure that you can see it, interact with it, touch it, feel it, type into it, install it, tap on it, something like that. Make sure that it's tangible and that you're that it's actually doing something of value to your customer. So something I did today, normally the way that the plugin development has gone is I put out the features and then I wait to hear what the pain points are before I make updates or modifications. Well, we put out a feature with the WooCredits plugin a couple months ago where we integrated with Gravity Forms, which is a popular WordPress plugin, and we added some the ability to price a Gravity form in terms of credits. So in order to submit a form, you'd have to deplete some credits from your account in order to submit the form. So we rolled it out. We had some feedback, hey, improve it here and there. We did. And we made a couple iterations to improve it when we launched it back in December. And I haven't heard anything since then. And normally my approach is no news is good news, which I think holds true for the most part. But today I just decided, you know what? I actually want to proactively go ask these customers if the Gravity Forms implementation is working well. And so that's what I did. I just wrote a very personal email, said, hey, to your customer, put in their name. You know, just wanted to follow up in relation to this feature request you made back in December. You know, how's it working for you? I understand that a lot of times customers only complain when the pain level gets to a certain point. So maybe there's stuff you want it to do, but it, you know, it's working okay. So you haven't really brought it up because it'd be a waste of your time. Anyway, so I'm just reaching out to customers in a very proactive way, asking them, hey, how else? One, is what we did working for you? And two, how do you see that we could potentially improve it to make it work even better for you? That I think is something that is lost in today's day and age of automation. Everything is so analytics driven, so data driven, so algorithm driven that the personal touch is lost. Like, just sit down and write a personal email to a customer and ask them, hey, how's this working? I really am curious. And I think it gets back to being curious as a founder instead of trying to constantly manipulate things to your favor. Like, that's one trend that I've seen and noticed. It's a trait that I notice with some entrepreneurial types is everything is an angle. Everything's a game. Everything's a manipulation. Everything's a kind of a give and take and angling and kind of seeing how they can benefit. And I just stop. I mean, that's just so disingenuous. And I think that is definitely something that we're losing in the algorithmic obsession with making decisions. Like, your brain is still a incredibly complex computer that's running algorithms that you can't even understand. So trust it. Use it. Stop looking to stupid code and stupid massive sets of data to try to make your decisions. Like, just unplug for a little bit and let the algorithms in your brain, which are so complex you can't even understand them, let them make some decisions for a while. Let them connect with humans for a while. Go have drinks with one of your clients and make eye contact. Take them to dinner and make eye contact. Set up a FaceTime and make eye contact. Stop worrying about tricking out algorithms to inflate your valuation and actually go engage in valuable human relationships. Holy smokes, people. What are we doing? We're just being dumb. The entrepreneur community is being dumb with their obsession with the latest trend. 6-7 years ago, it was infographics, and then it was data visualizations and big data and Watson, and now it's blockchain and AI and machine learning. And great, fine. I get it that technology moves. I get that it's on an accelerating exponential pace. I get that. But you still have a powerful processor up in your cranium that you should use to interact with real human beings from time to time. So we're approaching 25 minutes. I'm going to try to keep these things, I don't know, 25 minutes feels like a good length for this one tonight. Again, Greta Van Fleet, Highway Tune. we'll leave with this nice 70s sounding Michigan rock band that just came out. Whoops, wrong button. I'm playing it again. Muthonomics, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Send questions to brandonmuth@gmail.com. Or, yeah, just send them there. Brandonmuth, BrandonMuth @gmail.com. Put Muthonomics question in the subject, and we will get to them. In fact, I'm going to hit pause, and I'm actually going to answer a question that I got this last week. So this person wrote in. They said, "Dear Mr. Muth," you don't have to call me that. You can call me Brandon. That's fine. "Dear Mr. Muth, I'm just starting out in my entrepreneurial journey. I graduated school 8 months ago, and I am thinking about starting my own tech consulting firm. What would be your advice, and what are things that you would avoid, specifically mistakes, if you were to do it again? Sincerely, Brad." Brad. All right, cool. Yeah, I don't think he wants to be identified. He didn't include, he didn't include signature or Twitter handle or anything. So I'm guessing, and I'm not going to share his email. So we'll just call him Brad, tech consulting, recent college grad Brad. What mistakes would I avoid? I would simply say be patient. I think that's what, looking back, that's the biggest thing that I regret. When I started my business in 2004, from 04 to 08, I was tremendously impatient. And that damaged some relationships that I valued. It caused me to be a little bit scatterbrained when it came to growing the business, because I was constantly chasing the next revenue and constantly chasing the supposed going viral nonsense, which doesn't exist. If you make going viral your strategy for succeeding, stop. You're going to fail. You're going to blow yourself out emotionally. You're going to piss off everybody around you, and you're going to be really irritable. So remove going viral from the equation and ask yourself, okay, is this something I want to be doing you're 24 now? So is this something I want to be doing when I'm 34? Is this something I want to be doing when I'm 44? Don't just hop into it going, maybe I can go viral and go big and whatever. And I know those are tough questions for a 24-year-old. They get easier as you get older because you realize, crap, the time door is slamming shut on me, and I'm going to be old and gray with bad knees, bad ankles, and a colostomy bag soon. But you know, when you're 24, you don't really think in those terms. So I'd say the biggest mistake I made, Brad, is being tremendously impatient, way too impatient. So I would exhort you to be patient. And I think the way you do that is by asking questions of, do I see myself doing this and enjoying this when I'm 34? Do I see myself doing this and enjoying this when I'm 29? And if the knee-jerk answer is no, not really, then that's probably not the business you should be starting. So I would ask yourself those questions, but patience, patience, patience. It takes time to build your company. It takes time. This whole expectation that if you just put up a stupid 6-second dumb video that you're going to go viral overnight, yeah, that might get you a lot of views and you might be sort of in the social conversation for a little while, but do you really want your business to just be a meme? And a short-lived meme at that. I was talking to my older boys on one of their Instagram channels they follow. It was like, whoa, throwback to this ancient clip. And it was the D's Nuts guy. And I was like, that's not even 2 years ago. And he's already ancient in social media meme land. So yeah, you don't want to be the D's Nuts guy with your business. So strap in for the long haul. Seek to be patient. Ask yourself, can I see myself doing this in 5 years, 10 years? And then, you know, how you answer those questions are going to kind of dictate how you move forward. But as hard as it is as a young person to be patient, that's the one thing that if you can, the sooner you master patience and contentment, the sooner you're going to set yourself on a foundation for solid growth in your business. And I will state that again as a rhetorical overstatement because it's so important. The sooner you can master contentment and patience in your business, in your life, the sooner you're setting yourself up on a solid foundation to succeed with your business. So that's Muthonomics for Wednesday, March 7th. Peace! Questions, brandonmuth@gmail.com. Have a great evening.